are from Oceanside.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Cliff Roach, and I'm an alcoholic.
We love you, Cliff.
This is a group of morons. From Farmersville, who have a Cliff Roach fan club in Farmersville, California. I remember I went to my high school counselor and I said, I don't want anything else in life except to have a fan club in Farmersville, California. Kind of gets you here, doesn't it? And the leader of them is a nitwit named Grass. I didn't make that up. His name is Grass. And all the guys in that group say, I really love Grass. It's 7:29 for the clock watchers. I don't want anybody getting nervous. We talked here, my Al-Anon and I, we talked here 19 years ago. Can you imagine? And we've wanted to come back ever since. I hope we do better this time. You did good today, honey. And we probably never would have got back except that Stevie and Roger down here were romance on the AA campus 19 years ago. She hit on him. He was a newcomer. And she brought him up here to triumph over him. And they were entranced with our talks. And so they didn't... close to us ever since. Stevie's allowed me to help her sponsor Roger. And I deeply appreciate the small things I get to do. But they've been harassing this committee now for I don't know how many years. Gotta get Cliff and Pat. Finally this year they said, for Christ's sake, all right. Bring back the two from Oceanside, wherever the hell that is. No. So here we are. Thank you, Stevie and Roger. And thank you to the committee, Lou, and everybody's been so good to us. And thanks to Kevin and his wife who just drag us around. He jumps in the car. And, the last time I talked here, I was thinking about coming back. Remember the last time we were here, we were in some cabin somewhere. We walked everywhere on the, and we rushed around and saw the mountain and everything. And that was 19 years ago. And I've had bypass surgery since then. And I was 61 then. I was riding big waves then. And he got this car, you have to get a stepladder to get in. And it's kind of hard to breathe up here, isn't it? You haven't noticed that. Okay. But anyway, we're really, 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 really glad to be here again. I had told someone today that the first time we talked here to me, all the years that I've been speaking today, is one of the top three experiences I ever had was here in this meeting. Now, let's not spoil it tonight, huh, please? I had just won World War II. And I was attending college at San Jose State College. And on the GI Bill, which I had richly deserved. And every morning I had a 7:30 a.m. class, and my buddy and I would march to class each morning. We were used to it, you know. Early in the morning, we had a 7 a.m. class. We were going through St. James Park there in downtown San Jose this one morning. As we marched through the park, we heard this noise, and my buddy Richie and I turned and looked, and there was this, I don't know what you call it, remnant of a human being on the bench there. I guess he'd been a male at some time. And he was so dirty, he shined. And oozing from him, from every orifice. Is that clear enough? And the stench was horrendous. We both retched. And we hurried our way through the park. And we got to the other side of the park. And my buddy Richie said, that guy was an alcoholic. So I knew what you looked like. And I made a picture in my little mind here of what an alcoholic looked like. And the picture almost killed me. It damn near killed me. Now, why I should be in the dark about alcoholism is unknown to me now. My mother died of alcoholism on Skid Row in Los Angeles when she was 43 years old. She fell down a flight of stairs and broke her neck in a drunken stupor. And they call her death accidental fall. My dad died young of alcoholism. My aunts and uncles died of alcoholism. My grandparents died of alcoholism. My sister died of alcoholism. I'm the only one left because I went to the A&A. Yeah. I'm not an alcoholic because we have the gene. You know, most of you are familiar with the genetics nowadays, and they say that the genes have a lot to do. They call it the impellus. In my family, the DNA just add booze. That's it. It's all, you know. It's supposed to be a recessive gene, you know. Not in the Roach family. It's a dominant gene. You know? Little blue gene down to the end of the chromosome going, hey. One more, baby, one more. And I'm not an alcoholism because of my family, because of my genetic structure. When I was new in AA, I was a surfer dude. And a good spot to surf was in Ventura. And right near the big surf break there in Ventura was the courthouse where an AA member there, a judge, his name was Dick Heaton. When I came on the program, here's the head nod. He had like 30 years when I came on the program. And he was also, besides being a judge, he was the president of Mensa. That's the smart people's club, you know. I learned to spell that a couple of weeks ago. And I would get out of the water there from surfing. You know, I'd shower off. And then I'd go up to the courthouse and knock on the door. The gal let me in. He'd come back from the bench and have coffee with me. You know, I was a newcomer, and he was so kind to me, and he was a brilliant, brilliant man. But he and another member of Mensa, before he came to the program, he and another brilliant member of Mensa studied alcoholism while drinking. And they studied alcoholism for 2 years. They almost died. And after 2 years, these two brilliant men came to the conclusion, alcoholism is caused by drinking. Who would have thought, huh? And so, like, probably like you, I became an alcoholism by drinking. I've always been an alcoholic. I've never been a social drinker. I don't know what the hell social drinkers do. I don't know why they drink, the morons. Did you ever drink with those weenies? Oh, come on. You know, you take the cap off, you go, they say, I'll get it, I'll get it. I don't trust people like that, do you? And I'm a wild and crazy drunk. I love fighting. I used to say I like fighting better than sex. That's called step two. I love fighting. I would fight every chance I get. I never won, but I love fighting. I want to tell this story because I like to tell it when we have signers. Remember the late Dick, what's his name? Well, anyway, this guy, he used to, when he talked, I used to love to be with him when they had sinuses. He always said, I love to drink because when I drank, I had brass balls that clanged when I walked. So I always quote him whenever there's a cider. But one time, four other guys and I went down from Bakersfield, California, down to Long Beach to have a good time. And I woke up in the morning in this Fleabag hotel where we were staying, and I thought I was blind. And I had bled face down on this pillow all night, see? And it dried. So when I come up, the pillow came with me, see? I'm smothering in there. I'm terrified. So this other guy and I took... There's a sink in the corner. We threw water on the... I almost drowned. You know? Finally, I went... And we got the pillow off. There was this mirror in the dresser. I said, put the pillow back. Oh, my God. I looked like Quasimodo. You know what I mean? But I always tell a story because I always remember the guys that were with me. These four guys were my pals. They said, you were great, Roach. You got up 19 times. Kind of friends I had my whole life, you know. But I met Mrs. Roach, my Al-Anon, whom you heard this afternoon. I always like to introduce as my Al-Anon. You know how they introduce us? Have you met my alcoholic? Sit up, boy. Sit up. Tell them how long you've been sober. Anyway, I met her in college. She was down on Skid Row looking for an alcoholic to abuse her. And you're looking to be abused. You got your boy here, I'll tell you for sure. And we entered this 20-year suicide pact together. And as she said this afternoon, we had a dual disease. We had alcoholism and Catholicism. And, consequently, we had a kid every 9 months and 20 minutes. What it seemed like to me, anyway. Every time I come out, I have a blackout. What the hell is that? You know, and they're okay. They're okay when they're little. They're like kittens. But they grow. Oh. And the older they got, the weirder they got. God knows the weirder she got. And I was the head nut. And after a few years, I became a school teacher. Guy commits felonies and blackouts, becomes a school teacher. Just a hobby, lighten up. And I taught, as Pat said this afternoon... I taught my first 3 years in Manteca. I don't have to go to purgatory now. And after 3 years, and we moved to Oceanside, California, which is just 30 miles north of San Diego, right on the blue Pacific. And that's where I spent my whole career, and that's where I intend to die, unless I go too soon here tonight. And anyway, I was a very successful school teacher. That's not an oxymoron. I love teaching, and the kids love me, and I love the kids. I did a hell of a job as a high school teacher, some college, but primarily high school. Somebody asked my Al-Anon one time, how come her husband's such a good high school teacher? And she said, well, he's a very well-educated adolescent. I hate it when they're accurate and cruel, don't you? But anyway, I did a well at Oceanside. And then after moving to Oceanside, being a macho drinker. What meeting are you guys running? What's the name of your meeting? She's learning to read. As I was saying before I so crudely interrupted, all in fun. Now I lost my place. Anyway, I was teaching there at Oceanside High, and I became a surfer dude because all macho guys become surfer dudes if they live by the beach. And I loved surfing. Oh, I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. I surfed until I was 74 years old. Not many people do that. You know? After the bypass and everything, you should have seen me out there that last couple of years. But the kids love me. They just love me. They say, help Mr. Roach back on his board. There you go. But in 64, my buddy Rich and buddy Woody and I got this guy, gave us this building to use right down on the beach. And we had a surfboard shop right on the water. Can you imagine? Right there on the sand. It had been an abandoned bar, as a matter of fact. And the mayor of the town was just sitting on it, you know, to make money later, which he did. And we had to fix it up and paint it, put windows in, and got a refrigerator. And a few months later, we got some surfboards, too. No big hurry there. Can you imagine for a couple of budding drunks? Can you imagine? Right on the water every evening. We became sunset connoisseurs. We used to measure sunsets by martinis. Somebody would come down and say, I'd like to rent a board. Screw off, Charlie. We're watching the sunset now. Real tight. Best one we ever had was a 15 martini sunset. Oh, you should have seen it. It was glorious. And the sun and Woody and I went right together. They found us in the morning with sunburned mouths. Remember that? I think that ought to be on the 20 questions. You ever had a sunburned mouth? Get the hell out of here. Come back when you're ready, pal. But we did really well. But in February of 1965, I went down on a Sunday morning to repair a board. It was freezing cold. We weren't open. We were back teaching school again. And I had a hangover on Sunday morning. Imagine that. And I was real thirsty. And I went to the refrigerator to see if there was a Coke. Because I was not a morning drinker in 64. 65. Whatever it was. I was a weekend drinker, remember? Take Wednesday off. Get off my back. I'm a weekend drinker. Shut up. And so anyway, I was real thirsty, and I opened the refrigerator, and Woody had been there the night before, and he'd left about, maybe this much vodka and a half a pint. My dad would have called it a lick and a smell. And I was feeling, so there was some orange juice. And I thought, oh, God, that'll put the fire out. So I mixed up that little dinky drink, and I drank it down. And I went on about my business. And we had some new people here tonight, and welcome. Can you imagine that little girl with 2 years coming all the way up here? Everybody going, yeah. You got me up here. I'd have gone, you know, 2 days. Come up to the front. Oh, yeah, wait for me, pal. God love you. You know, read that book. We signed it for you. You can read that part, too. And anyway, I drank that little drink, and I was standing on the board. And that little tiny bit of vodka got in my bloodstream. You know how it'll do? How you certain? And my mind talked to me. And my mind said, shame on you, shame on you. That was Woody's booze you drank. Why don't you go up to the liquor store and get old Woody a pint?
the kind of guy I am. You know what I mean? That afternoon, I got Woody a fifth. And I ended up just bory-eyed drunk. My dad would call it, just resin all over me. The board was screwed forever. Shop was a mess. Crawled home literally on my hands and knees 11 blocks. Got up the next morning, called Ralph, remember him, for an inordinate amount of time. And I lurched out and said to my wife at the time, she had one of those pre-alimentum ticks in the eye by then. It was a marine town. We couldn't let her go downtown doing that all the time. And I said to my little bride, I said, I got to do something about my drinking. I'm getting drunk when I don't even mean to. Most of the time I meant to. You know? And the little devil, she'd cut this thing out of the paper about the A&A. I don't know why she thought to do that. And it said what it's always said. The only, as far as I know, the only ad we've ever had said, if you want to drink, that's your business. If you want to quit, call Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know about you, but I love it. I think it's perfect. We're not a treatment center, and we're not a hospital, and we're not a halfway house. We're not a do-good society. Hell, we're not very nice people. But that little gal with the 2 days, if you want to stay sober, this room is filled with people who go to the ends of the earth for you, who will go to the ends of the earth for you if you want to quit drinking. If you would rather drink, have at it, pal. I don't care. So anyway, I called the A&A because she was looking at me. And we only had like maybe 12 meetings in the whole North County in those days. And I went to about 3 of them. And I realized I'd been hasty. kind of jumped the gun here. I'm sorry. They seem to have the collective IQ of an orange. I tried to help them. About the third night, I'm laying a little Nietzsche on them. And this one guy said, hey, we keep it simple here. And I said, no kidding. You could have fooled me, Leroy. They used to have a meeting on Sunday night there. Little meeting, there were maybe 40 people. They would bring people in from outside. And I went to that meeting every month, whether I needed it or not. And I would skulk in the back door, get the loser's chair, you know, the one right by the door. And I would fold my arms, and I would judge the speakers. Sounds to me like everybody's name was Clem. His wife's name was Martha. They'd been out of bib overalls about an hour and a half. And aside from the retardation, they had drunk too much. And they had drunk too much for 3 years, and it started really interfering with their lives. So they'd come here to the A&A, and they had put the and returned to being good, decent, happy, sincere, worthwhile folk again. They had been rehabilitated. My hero was in 1965 was a guy named Eldridge Cleaver. He was a black militant terrorist. That was my hero. My politics were blow it up or burn it down. I didn't give a shit which. I was for peace. And if you weren't for peace, I'd kill you. And old Eldridge had given this speech a few months earlier, and he was talking about the prison system in California, about how they're always trying to rehabilitate him. He says, you know what they'd never known? He had never been rehabilitated. You can't rehabilitate somebody who's never been rehabilitated. I don't know, but that's how I felt in the A&A. At some point, Clem and Martha in their wretched lives had been okay. I don't know about you, but I have never been okay. I have always been insane. I walked on the edge of psychosis my whole life. When I was 4 years old, we lived in Venice, California. I was 4 years old. I used to stand on the speedway, wait for a car. When a car would come, I'd go. Then I'd wait for another, like a little soldier at his post. You know? Didn't know how to do this yet, you know. That's how I felt when I was four. But I lived my life by anger and violence, vendetta, and I was totally insane. And that's how I lived. And so I resigned from AA. It didn't have any meaning for me. And for the next 5 years, I was in and out of AA. I was an AA loser. If they ever have a Losers Hall of Fame, I'll have a bust right by the door. I'm a loser's loser. I'm an overeducated, pompous ass, smirking loser. I had the head bob down here. Oh, man. And every time I came to AA, these guys would tell me it's going to get worse if you go back out there, and I'd go back out there and get worse. See, I almost died of alcoholism because I'm a functioning alcoholic. Now, you know, the good stories, you hear the great stories of people been on death row and skid row and murdered 37 people. Things give you stature on the program, you know what I mean? I'm a functioning alcoholic. Now, the experts, whoever the hell they are, the experts say that 95 to 97% of us who die of the disease of alcoholism, who become dead from alcoholism, are people like moi. People who get up every day and go to work and do the job and do it better than you. Do it better than anybody. I'm a goer and a doer and an achiever. A functioning alcoholic. My buddy at home says a functioning alcoholic is one whose wife works. Don't tell that to Dalinon meeting. No. They do not find that amusing. As a matter of fact, it makes them go. You married guys, you remember that?
Don't you think you had a few too many?
As I say, you had a few too few. That's your problem, lady. A couple and loosen up, for God's sake. You know? Oh, and this one, she was worse. Their worst kind, she was a counter. Yeah. You have one of those, huh?
That's your fifth one today.
Shut up and eat your breakfast, will you? Leave me the hell. And the week I came to Alcoholics Anonymous this time, I weighed 163 pounds. I had 4% body fat. I used to surf for like 3 hours and then get out and run 5 miles. I could bench 285. Took me 25 minutes to pass a mirror. Ever, for God's sake, don't ask me for directions. I say it's right over. My daughters used to get money from me all the time. They would. I didn't have a shirt on, which was most of the time. And they'd come up and say, V up, Daddy, V up. They go, oh, can I have $10? Yeah, sure. I hate to tell you, I was 2 years sober before I figured that out. What do you mean, alcoholic? I'm an Adonis, for God's sakes. And I was one of the top three debate coaches in the United States. That's an honor roughly equivalent to being one of the top three prostitutes in Elko, Nevada. Among speech coaches, it's a big deal, you know. I became a speech coach by accident.
the principal called me in one day, which he was wont to do, and he had got this flyer in the mail about a debate and a speech tournament, which was being held 30 miles down the road at San Diego State. And he was all excited about it. I was teaching a speech class. He said, why don't you take some of your kids? That I better be good for them. So I'll be in trouble. I said, oh, what a good idea. I found a 6 or 8 dodos. We went down the road. And we were amazed when we got there. There were like 50 schools participating. Maybe 500 contestants. All the boys were in 3-piece suits with vests and ties. All the girls in these lovely business clothes. We're in Levi's and sweatshirts. What the hell do we know? And they slaughtered us. They killed us. We did not win a round. I mean, they ground us in the dirt, is what they did. I don't know what kind of drunk you are, but I don't care for losing. And I went in the coach's room. There were about 20 of them in there. They're all pals. They're buddies doing this all the time. And they ignored me. It seemed to me. So I hung around all day. You know who you are. Snub you more that way if you hang around. One guy there really pissed me off. He had a lot of hair. That bothered me right away. No, not just hair. I mean, one of those silver manes, gorgeous, 9 barbers to get it right. He had about $1,000 suit on. The other coaches did this when they went in front of me. About 2 in the afternoon, this prince of coaches, this gray-haired cretin, turns to me and says, where are you from? God, I was grateful to be spoken to finally. I said, Oceanside. And he said, oh, where's that? 30 miles up. He gave me a resentment. I don't mean a resentment. I mean a resentment. And I went back to Oceanside High, and I built me a speech team. Took me 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years, but I built a monster speech team. I built a juggernaut speech team, and I did it with sheer hatred. Do you know how much work that is? To make 150 people do what they don't want to do? Do you have any idea what you go through for that? From 7 in the morning till 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, in their faces, screaming, yelling, coaching! Guy next door used to say, I'd love him while he's watching them leave your room wiping the spit off their glasses. You know. And this reporter said to my captain, what's the secret of your coach's success? The kid said, terror. She wasn't lying. She's the chairman of the speech department and the chancellor of women's studies at San Francisco State College today. Didn't do her any harm, you know. Poor old Bobby Knight, they fired him for choking one guy. And it was a guy. Oh, God, it's hard work. See, I'm a functioning alcoholic. I don't touch a drop of booze all day. Out in the glove compartment of the car, waiting for me, it's about 1/2 pint of hot vodka. I love to talk about hot vodka at Al-Anon meetings. They go, hey, ooh, yeah. God, you and I know, huh? And it would just call to me all day, that 1/2 pint. Go get him, Cliff, baby. I'm waiting, darling. And I'd just go through that day and not eat anything all day. Drink 300 cups of coffee. And stay pissed off. That last kid would leave. Night, Miss Roach. Yeah, I get to hell. I'd lurch out to that 58 Chevy station wagon, my surfing car. And I'd get in that car and I'd open up that 1/2 pint of hot vodka. Huh? What a way to end the day. Huh? Light that cheap stogie and go. I always drank 1/2 pint, didn't you? Is there anything like hot vodka? Into the bloodstream. The muscles relaxed. The brain would subside. I'd puff on that stogie. God damn, you're a good coach. And I finished that 1/2 pint and
I would sit there in the darkness of that 58 Chevy of mine on an abandoned school lot. And I would have my 8 minutes. This is my story. I don't know what the hell your story is. But in my case, after I drink about a half an hour, something happens to me. And I have about 8 minutes where everything in my life is all right. Where I am enough for about 8 minutes. And then I would, in all the years that I was in and out of AA, a loser, I never once told you about the 8 minutes, not once. And then I would go home and destroy my family. And I really start drinking when I would get home, and Pat this afternoon was talking about our 5 kids. And I'm a raging alcoholic. I'm a violent alcoholic and an abusive alcoholic and a mean, satirical, bad drunk. And I got drunk the last 7 or 8 years every night at home. And I turned that house into an insane asylum. I was raised in an insane asylum, and I thought my folks were bad. I made them look good. In the late 60s now, huh? 3 of my kids are in high school in the late 60s. Oldest son is working his way through high school as a hashish salesman. Never had to give him any spending money, I'll guarantee you. I said, hit him up for a fifth about once a week. Yeah, Dad, what do you need? You know. Had hair down to his butt, and his head went like this all the time. Called his mother, man. Hey, man, what's for dinner? Loved LSD. Oh, he loved LSD. A lot of you remember, you see things when you take LSD. You're right in the middle of a sentence, you say, what was that? What's the shape I'm in at the time? I said, I don't know. What was it? Where? What? And Grandma was living, she said, I'll explain it. Oh, my God. So I destroyed my family. No human power could have saved my family. No human, it's too late. It was a totally destroyed 7 group of people. Just, it's too late. No human power could help my family. But I built that speech team, dying of alcoholism, and I built that speech team. And after a couple of years, my team won one of those tournaments. But I didn't say anything to the gray-haired guy. It wasn't time yet. We know when it's time, don't we, huh? The next year, there were, I think, 14 tournaments with 30 schools in each tournament. My team took first place in every single tournament. I can wait. I think revenge is better than Christmas. The next year there was a tournament. There were 25 schools competing in the tournament. And my team scored more sweepstakes points than the other 24 schools combined. Then I went up to that gray-haired guy. Remember him? I put my nose right against his and I said, do you know where Oceanside is now? He just looked blank. He said, what are you talking about? I said, don't you remember 4 or 5 years ago? You said to me, Oceanside, where's that? And he said, we just moved here from Nebraska. I didn't know where it was. The story of my life. 4 or 5 years, this guy's in bed every night in San Diego. I'm up at Oceanside. How it gets here, you... I'm going to tell you guys the story that I don't very often tell because I love you. This group, I got to tell you. My wife's going, oh, she's not going to tell you. If this offends anybody, I'm really sorry. But we've got a lot of new people. I want you to know you don't get all well here. several years, several years ago, I had a prostate trim. And I was in, I had a lot of trouble with it. I mean, it was bad. I was in a lot of pain. So I put up with it for about a month. Finally, I just called a doctor. You know, dialed his little girl came out and said, doctor's office. I said, this is Cliff Roach. That butcher ruined the whole goddamn. I'm in terrible pain here. And I told her where it was and where it moved to. I did about 10 minutes ending with, I pissed the bed a couple times, for Christ's sakes. I didn't do that when I was drunk. And the little girl said, Mr. Roach, this is your eye doctor's office. So if you're new here, we don't get all well here. But I want to tell you what's different is I started laughing. And she started laughing. And we laughed. I was on the floor laughing. And we screamed and we laughed. So a couple of weeks later, I went into the eye doctor's office. And I said, where's Evelyn? And they said, right over there. I said, Evelyn, I'm Mr. Roach. Evelyn said, oh, hi, Mr. Roach. And everybody else in the office went, lousy fink. But right after I had that that event with the gray-haired guy, my wife and I had one of our main events, which the neighbors have come to miss so much. Our neighbors never got television until after I got sober, did yours? We were always the entertainment for the neighborhood. Hey, he's coming back! He's coming back! They'll have those Venetian blind marks on their forehead, you know. But anyway, she threw me out for what she did. I said I was going to move out, and everybody said, yeah, that's what she threw me out. And I'm living down at the beach with my buddy and his girlfriend, where I wanted to live anyway. I'd said if I could just unload that witch and those long-haired dopey children, I could drink like a gentleman again. And I'd gotten rid of them, and it wasn't working. And I was drunk, but I missed work, which had always been my badge of courage. And I felt like my life was slipping between my fingers. And I went by the house one afternoon, crying to my wife about money. And the hashy salesman was kind of bobbing in the background there. Humming a tune from the subplanet Pluto. And as I look back on it, it's the dumbest thing I ever did in my life. I turned to him and I said, Dave, what's it like not to have your old man around the house? And my 16-year-old boy looked me right in the eye and he said, it's beautiful. And I'm standing here tonight, coming up on 37 years sober. And and I'm standing here tonight because of the courage of a 16-year-old kid. I mean, he had a lot of reason to be physically afraid of me. I was a lot tougher on him than any of the other kids even. But he was honest enough to look me in the eye and tell me what I really was. And I went back to that dump at the beach and ranted and raved and sniveled and whined. But I did not take a drink that afternoon. It had been a long time since I had not taken a drink that afternoon. Save some of that for me for after the meeting. God, man. A relative of yours? Anyway. I sat out in the screen porch there and I watched the most beautiful sunset that I've ever seen. It was one of those where the sky and the water and the wet sand and all the same magenta color. And as the sun was going down into the ocean, I had, or I guess you had, or you wouldn't be here tonight, AA or Al-Anon. I had what our big book calls the moment of clarity. My friend Polly calls it the moment of grace, the gift, grace. And I went in the bedroom and I dug out the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I had read in one of my travels through the program. Being an English teacher, I thought it was very poorly written. Newcomer gal, it read a lot better this time. And I read the big book for 3 days and three nights. I called in sick. I didn't go to work. I ate a little bit, slept even less. And I read the big book, and I read it cover to cover, if you're new. I read all the stories. I read the appendix in the back. And on the third time through the book on the 13th of January, 1970, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I was on page 63 again. And on page 63, if you're new, there's a little prayer. And the prayer is step 3. I've always called it the formal terms of surrender. And I knelt down on that filthy linoleum floor on that dump of the beach where I was living, and I read that prayer out loud to myself. I read, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as you will. Relieve me of the bondage of self. And I've heard maybe 200 fifth steps in my years in the program. And the number one defect of character of every man I've ever worked with is self-obsession. And I had an experience on my knees there that morning on the 13th of January, 1970. And for years I tried to tell you what happened to me. And 3 years ago, this little gal in the Grapevine article, she did the same thing I had done 32 years before. She was in a treatment center. She's 17. She's 25, 22 now. And she did exactly what I had done 32 years before. She knelt down in that treatment center and read the third step prayer out loud to herself. And in the article, she said, I was engulfed by a great laughing love. That'll do it for me. A great laughing love. And I have not had a drink since that time. And that night I was at Bill Blake's house, this little electrician my wife talked about today. He had been a Skid Row wino there in Oceanside. He was sober 8 years. One of those AA fanatics you hate when you're a loser. You know, you come in the door and they pounce on you like carrion. He's always saying, he used to say stupid things to me like, you want to go up to Los Angeles with us tomorrow night? No. What I used to want to say is, I can't stand you guys here. What the hell? I want to drive 100 miles to meet some more of you. You know? But I would just say, no, thank you. But he was always there. Very annoying man. But that night, I was at his door. And that's one of the two things that I'll talk about anytime I ever give an AA pitch. I'm a loser. I'm a 5-year, overeducated, pompous, smirking loser. Margie, Bill's wife, opened the door. Here he is on the porch. Loser. Are you new tonight? I have never seen anyone so glad to see me in my life. Can you imagine? She said, Cliff. Oh, and out I go. Pours me a cup of coffee. She said, oh, this is wonderful. This is great. She said, Bill's been crazy lately. He's had nobody to work with. Oh, this is so. And Bill comes in, Cliff! Half an hour, I'm thinking, anything else I can do to help you folks out? You're glad to help any way I can. Cliff's here. We can start AA now. But you know, 3 weeks later, I was in a newcomer meeting, and one of the other newcomers said, what do you mean this is a selfish program? And when the guy asked the question, I knew the answer. I got the answer the night I got here. They were glad for me. They've been praying for me for 5 years. But they were more glad for Bill and Margie, because they knew the great secret. You can't have it unless you give it away. You can't stay here unless you're willing to give it away.
These people on the committee up here with me, they know what I'm talking about. That goof Ken with the taping, he knows what I'm talking about. He spends every weekend of his life making records of jerks like me. Can you imagine that? I love to see these kids when they show up. All these, they're everywhere. And they carry the message their way. Got a guy in my home group. If you're new, he will find you. Yeah. Oh, he will find you. He's on an antenna. I don't know how in the hell he does it. My sponsor, Bill, was probably the worst speaker in the history of AA. He was so self-conscious when he was awful. He used to say, I spoke everywhere in AA once. But you put my sponsor, Bill, in the front seat of a car with a newcomer. He was magic. Nobody ever escaped him. No one ever escaped him. And he was mean. Thank God. I wouldn't be here tonight if he'd been a nice guy. He was rotten mean. Oh, I think the nicest thing he said to me the first 5 years was, shut up. Shut up. Well, I told him, I have degrees, you know. He says, so does the thermometer. You know where they stick that sometimes? I thought the first step was, shut up and get in the car. Only he had a colorful adjective before car. Just shut up and get in the car. In the back seat on the hump. There's a method to that, too. I mean, if you're the guy in the backseat on the hump, you become a 12-stepper. You find a new guy. Hey, come with us. You want to talk about love? He took me to a meeting every night for 2 years. You want to talk about love? He took me to a meeting every night for 2 years. First it was just me, then Al came home, then Skip, then Bernie, then Bob, then the other Al. He loved being called the other Al. Then we had carloads of guys. We drove all over Southern California. We went to all the meetings in Southern California where people were laughing. He knew me. I can't stay here. I'm sorry. If I have to be a mope, I'm not going to stay here. Oh, the laughter of alcohol. He took me to meetings where people had their heads back, roaring with laughter. Don't you love it? Is there anything? It's the spiritual part of the program. There's no doubt about it. Nothing I laugh at will ever come back and haunt me again. The stuff I used to lie awake all night, my teeth grinding, my stomach turning. It's funny now, and to hell with it. Oh, listen, if you're new tonight and you're having trouble laughing at yourself, see me after the meeting. I'll be glad to help you. Oh, my God, we had fun. One of those meetings where they were like, I'd love to get me a brand new scuzzbag guy, you know. Take him to a meeting and take him to another meeting and take him to another meeting. Maybe the 12th or 13th or 14th meeting, he's sitting beside me and he goes, gotcha! Oh, I gotcha now. Al-Anons are even worse. Pat and I, we get brand new Al-Anons, and we take them to AA speaker meetings like this, you know, and get her in between us where she can't escape. You know, and some goof's up here, some AA guy. I fell to the Christmas tree and smashed all the presents. You know, we all go, yeah. And this new Al-Anon sitting there. Not funny to her. So we just take her to another meeting tomorrow night. And one night she throws her head back and laughs. Once we get you laughing, we got you. Because you know you belong. Clancy talks about great tunnel meetings. You ever hear him talk about that? Where the six guys sit around a table every week and stay sober. You have to have hemorrhoids to get the expression just right. And sobriety is like this long gray tunnel. And you trudge. Every year a trap door opens and a cake comes down. You've been to those meetings, haven't you? Yeah. Hey, don't wait for me, baby. Don't wait for me. I'm going to go where they're having a good time. And when I was doing whatever was wrong in my life, I had lots wrong in my life. Lots wrong. Kids on drugs. Wife wouldn't go to Al-Anon. Owed $1 billion. Didn't have a brass razzoo. And I would go to my sponsor's house and I would sob and tell him all the troubles I was having. You know what they're doing over there now? And he would always listen courteously. You know how they listen? I always found it's good to make a noise once in a while, like, oh. That way they think you're paying attention. And I would finally, I would run down. And I finally say, and he would say, go get Al and take him to the meeting. What the hell has that got to do with the nervous breakdown? What is that? It's like asking a guy, what time is it? The horse is dead. Doesn't make any sense. So I would go get Al. And I hated Al. He was a bigger loser than me. He was a 10-year loser. I was only a 5-year loser. And he had no driver's license, of course. And I'd drive the big blowhard to the meeting. Blah, 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 blah. We'd set the meeting up, make the coffee, and everybody come. Everybody go home. We'd set the meeting down, wash the coffee. But he had real cups. He had to wash because he was so shaky. He just put his hands in the water, you know. But I could dry. Shit, you know. Load the blowhard in the car, drive him home. Blah, 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 blah. And I'd let Al off. And I'd start driving home, and this feeling would come over me. It would start right here, and I just spread out all through my room. Scared the hell out of me. It felt so good. It only lasted 40 seconds, you know, but I thought it's because I got rid of Al. But then I stood at the door and greeted, which I hated very much, you know. And I mopped up your spilt coffee. And I went on all these 12-step calls and got to see the light come on in men's eyes. I did the things which I thought were stupid things he made me do, which turned out to be service. And I kept, that feeling kept getting better and better. Better than the 8 minutes ever was. You know what the feeling is? It's a feeling of being enough. I don't know what you... But I was never enough of anything in my life. And the actions that I've taken in Alcoholics Anonymous made it possible for me to be enough almost every day of my life. And we did the steps too. Kathy last night talked beautifully on the steps, especially about steps 6 and 7s, which separates the winners from the losers. If you're not willing to change, you better get back to drinking then. Kathy talked beautifully on steps 6 and 7 last night. When they, you know, we did those steps till he was happy with me. It wasn't when I was satisfied, till he was satisfied. And if you're new tonight, the program is 1 through 12. That is the program, step 1 through 12. The rest of it is all fun and games, and I love every second of it. But the program is 1 through 12. And he told me, because I was... He told me because I was a brilliant intellectual, they numbered them for me. 1, 2, 3. Alcoholism is the only prison where the locks are on the inside. And he gave me the 12 keys to let me out. I love these people nowadays with the steps. They study the steps. They listen to tapes about the steps. They meditate on the steps. They shrink them real small and put them in their navel. They do the steps. They told me I had to do them. I had to do the steps. You know, whenever I hear these people on meditating on the steps, I always think about the old priest is back in the sacristy, and the young priest has been out in the front of the church, and he comes running back, and he says, Father, you'll never guess what happened. He said a young man came in the back of the church, and he was on two crutches, and he took some holy water, and he threw it on the left side, and he threw away the crutch. And he took some holy water, threw it on the right side, and he threw away the crutch. and the Monsignor said, "It's a miracle. Where's the young man?" He said, "Fighting his ass out by the holy water." Little parable for you. And so I've taken the actions of Alcoholics Anonymous and done the footwork in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I look around the world today and I see a beautiful place. I'm like Kathy. I got put into service real early. By the way, Mother Teresa was in our area a number of years ago and she had a heart attack. And a couple of buddies of mine were cardiologists, took care of her. They said, you know, you couldn't be in the room with her and not know she was a spiritual being. And some reporter asked her this question, and the answer was in the paper, and I cut it out and carried it till it rotted away. She said to this reporter, "The fruit of faith is love, and the fruit of love is service. And the fruit of service is peace. I will comprehend the word serenity, and I will know peace. And the fruit of service is peace." And anybody in this room knows who's really in this program, anybody in this room knows, you know, to give to each other is the ultimate pleasure. When I was maybe, 2 years sober one night, I couldn't sleep, and I was reading the big book. It helps. Not as good as the service manual, but it's okay. Oh, if you can't, if you have insomnia, get the service manual. Oh, you'll be gone in just no time at all. But I got to the bottom of page 83 and the top of page 84, and I saw them. Almost 2 years sober, I saw the promises. I think I saw them because of the actions I had taken. They were starting to come true in my life. Said that I was going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. You know, I would comprehend the word serenity and I would know peace. I would be able to handle situations which used to baffle me, like life. And right in the middle of the promises, that sneaky Bill Wilson, he's the biggest sneak that ever lived. He put how it happens. He put right in the middle so we would notice them. He said, no matter how far down the scale we're going, we'll see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. The cure to self-obsession. No matter how far down the scale we say, our experience can benefit others. One drunk talking to another drunk in the front seat of a car. From 2 to almost 3 million in 70 years. One drunk talking to another drunk in the front seat of a car on the way to a meeting. I was reading something of Walt Whitman's the other day, and he was talking about God. Why should I want to see God better than this day? I see God every day and every hour of the day in the eyes of the men and women. I see God in my own eyes, in the glass. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Cliff.